Alexa, play
The Rich Eisen Show.
Here's a station you might like.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
This is one of the most shocking turns of a career in the 20 plus years that I have been covering this league.
From The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Is Russell Wilson going to turn into a journeyman?
Earlier on the show, co-host of ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, Michael Wilbon, NFL Network analyst Bucky Brooks. Coming up, 12-year NBA veteran Rex Chapman. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Proof is that I'm sitting here talking. That's an odd way to start an hour, don't you think?
I liked it.
You know what? When you do this show every day, just kind of figure out,
new ways to say hello and welcome people in.
Great chat last hour with Michael Wilbon. Started the show with my power rankings of top free agents in the NFL. We talked about the Kelce podcast and how Jason's retiring and what that means. And just it's been a really fascinating 2 hours of just talk and hanging out. And if you missed any of it, we re-air on the Roku channel, channel 210, as soon as we are done. The Roku experience is there also for video on demand. And we're here from 12 to 3 Eastern every single day and love being here and appreciate your viewership there and listenership on this Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio affiliate, Sirius XM Odyssey, our podcast as well. We're thrilled to have one of my favorite humans. And it's truly one of the best things about that hellscape called Twitter, now X, is I got to meet this guy essentially through it and then be able to call him a friend. And I love looking down and seeing a text from him whenever he wants to reach out, and thrilled to lend this platform, like so many others, to help this man sell books. It's Hard for Me to Live With Me, a new memoir available now wherever you get your books, from the great Rex Chapman. How are you, Rex?
Rich, thanks for having me, buddy. I'm doing well. How about you? Recovered from the combine?
Oh, yeah. I'm sitting on my ass for 4 straight days just saying, look at that guy run. And you reached out during the combine. I love seeing you, man, on my phone. And now on my screen right here on this show. Congrats on all the outpouring of support about your book, Rex.
It's wild. It really is wild. And I'm going to try it. I was on Dan Patrick's show earlier, and yep, you guys are my friend. And I got a little too comfortable on Dan's show and ended up cussing a couple of times. So I'll try to not do that today.
We have a button here, Rex. Jason Feller is now on notice. It's very rare to get a guest on notice to say, get ready. And get ready to hit the button. So he's got it ready. Let's start with the why. Why did you write it, Rex?
I don't know that I would have. Seth Davis called me it's been about 4 years ago now, and just out of nowhere, asked me if, you know, I would keep. He had seen me on something talking about opioids, and I think talking about talking about George Floyd's murder. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. He called me and said, you ready to change the world? I didn't really know what he meant, but I said, sure. What do you mean? And he ran it by me and we started talking about it. And it was right as the pandemic started. So we were talking a lot on the phone during the days and, you know, kind of hammered out a proposal and sent it out, and Simon and Schuster loved it and wanted to do it. But then the hard part starts and you have to really dig in. And the hardest part, I did it for my kids. I did it for my kids, and hopefully they can see a different me. I was a drug addict for, when I got arrested in 2014, our oldest was 20 and our youngest was probably 11 or 12. And, that's college age and middle school age. I'm all over the papers, all over the news for being arrested and a drug addict. I remember sitting in rehab and thinking, look, if I'm going to live, then I need to really try to figure out what's wrong with me and why I do the things that I do, and really try. So I did. I buckled down and started really digging into my life and the decisions and choices I've made, and therapy, I think, probably saved my life.
Well, you know, and I think just starting here is that starting off point, Rex. I think you're kind of hitting right on the head what I'm sure you must hear from so many others who have family members who have gone through what you're describing, or people who are the ones going through what you're describing, is that the addiction is something you need to face, and the choices that you may make for something that does feel like you have no control over it, right? And realizing that that there is some control you can exert, and that choices need to be made, and there is some sort of sense of responsibility you have to take, as opposed to saying, all of these circumstances in my life have caused me to do this sort of thing. And finding that moment without having to hit rock bottom might be the whole, you know, key to helping others. How, what do you say to those who are searching for that, Rex?
Man, I swear, and I hate to do this again, but I mentioned it in the book. A good friend of mine, Rick Pitino, came to see me. Pride is a hell of a thing. And Rick came to see me in rehab, and I was a bawling mess. He and his assistant, Vinny Tatum, both lifelong friends of mine. And I was crying, toxic, telling them I'm toxic. They could probably barely understand me. Rick finally said, listen, look at me. And he said, you're going to eat a lot of crap for a while. He said, at first, it's going to be a big beach ball sized ball of crap. And he said, if you do the next right thing, slowly but surely, that beach ball will turn into a basketball. And do the next right thing, it'll turn into a volleyball, and then a softball, tennis ball, golf ball, ping pong ball, marble, pebble. And that won't be the first thing people think about you anymore, but it's going to take some time, and you're going to eat some stuff. And this has come from a guy who's been through some stuff. So for whatever reason, I latched onto that. And when you're at rock bottom, and my friend said, many of my close friends said, Rex, man, we didn't want to see you arrested. We didn't want this to happen to you, but something had to happen because you were going to die. You were going to die. And they're right. You know, you can't just eat 40, 50 pills a day with no water for years and think that you're going to be okay, or take, you know, a medicine that's supposed to wean you off of opioids for 10 years and think that's going to be okay. Just a lot of crazy thinking and, you know, really feeling bad about myself as a person and digging into that and, you know, realize slowly but surely started, you know, to see that what Rick was saying was true. And, you know, here I am. The other thing about the book, I've gotten such an outpouring from people, you know, on Twitter, text messages, phone calls from so many people. And it makes me feel really good. This is just on a bigger scale. I've been speaking and doing this stuff. You know, I have. Yes. I talk about freely and openly. And if anybody, family member, friend has a problem, you know, anybody, you can put them in touch with me to call. This is just, this book has been on a bigger scale. And I get stories from people all day long that I read and I try to respond to about my brother had an issue. My uncle, my dad died from alcoholism. I've always had mental illness, the anxiety and people struggle, man. Life is hard. And I hope that this is hitting a chord. Really, I just wanted to do it for my children and for anyone else, you know, struggling with addiction. And if people get something out of it, great. Because it's been kind of hell living it.
Well, I mean, in terms of that, Rex Chapman here, It's Hard for Me to Live With Me is a book everyone should get, available wherever you get your books right now. You know, writing a book, the toughest thing anyone will ever tell you about writing a book, even though you had help of such a terrific writer in Seth Davis, is selling it and getting out there. No, seriously, that's the tough part is when the book comes out and selling it.
You know, I have nothing. I have no idea what any of this is. Thank you, Rich. Go ahead, finish that
No,
thought real quick.
but in selling it, you got to have this conversation, it seems, over and over and over again, and it comes across from me, and I know differently though, is you're so free talking about it, but I'll see sometimes you tweeting out like that was tough. That was tough that you had to go through that conversation. So, do you have to steel yourself up for even conversations like this,
Yes,
Rex?
definitely. Yes, definitely. And it's gotten better, markedly better over the past week since I
That's
had to do
good.
it. Seth was a rock star, is a rock star, you know, and he did all the heavy lifting. I'm barely literate. So, the best thing he did was right at the beginning, he said, "Listen, man, we're going to talk about some hard stuff. No shame ever. I'm not judging you for anything." He said that. He probably said it 50 times while we were doing it because I had to tell him the worst parts about my life. Some of it we didn't use. But I will say this. When I was in college and unrelated to basketball, I had a panic attack, and it's detailed in the book. I didn't know, I'd never heard the term panic attack and didn't know that's what it was, and probably until 2 years ago. I felt like I needed to go to the hospital. I ended up getting over it in a couple of days, and I forgot about it, completely forgot about it until we were writing this book. And about 6 months ago, when we were wrapping up the book, Rich, I had another one. And fortunately, my girlfriend was there, and Whitney Lawson, and she took great care of me for a couple of days, and I snapped out of it. But I don't know how to explain it except. I remember as a kid hearing people say, "Well, she had a nervous breakdown, you know." That's what I felt like. I feel like nothing matters. I feel hot. I can't really move my arms, and breathing is tight. My chest is tight. It's happened only twice in my whole life. And it's due to, some of the stuff that I had to, or I felt like I had to include in the book for it to be authentic and honest.
And then of the many people, I saw this one, and I saw your reaction to it too. LeBron putting up, congratulating you on the book, and how it's awesome for you to be able to overcome your shortcomings and obstacles life put in front of you. True leader and king, definitely supporting and ordering your book. And then 2 days later, there he is holding up your book and pointing to it. I mean, come on,
It's
man.
just wild. I don't even know what to think. I'm gonna reveal this. I don't know LeBron that well. We know each other, obviously. And he only knows me from highlights, and he's a basketball historian. Every time that dude sees me, and the first time I met him was fresh out of rehab, and I think he knew it. And he came up and said, "Sexy Rexy." He says it every time and hugs me, gives me big love. I saw him in Phoenix a couple of weeks ago at the Suns Lakers game. And it's the first time I've seen him since Bronny had his heart issue last year, his son. And he gave me the same love, came up to me, and I just pulled him aside for a second. And I said, "Hey, man, I'm really, really excited about Bronny getting back out there." And I let him know that I know people have their opinions on Bronny. I'm a Bronny James fan. I've watched him grow up, and I've watched him play against Reed Sheppard, Jeff Sheppard's son, who plays at Kentucky. They've been playing against each other since they're 12. In my opinion, they're both longtime pros in the NBA. And I'd pass that along to LeBron. And that's his baby, man. It's his oldest baby. He and his wife been through it. Their son's heart stopped in college. I can't imagine anything more terrifying. So I told him that, and then here we are. I released the book a week later, and he just does this on his own. What a guy. What a guy. Man.
I'm glad you told the backstory because I even thought, okay, book comes out, you pull every string you can to help
No.
promote it or anything. He did that on his
On his
complete
own.
lonesome.
On his own. Yes.
Okay. He got the
And
book and he took a
I've had
picture.
everybody reach out. Stephen Curry, of course. Stephen's in the book. He's my little buddy. But
Right.
Kevin Durant, you name it. Everybody that you can think of has just and I. Because honestly, Seth, there I go, Rich. I've been preparing myself for people to just hate me and hate the book. And also, the book is selling, and I feel like the first year trainer, first year owner of a like a thoroughbred horse who goes to the Kentucky Derby. I have, and there's people been in the book business forever that, they look to sell a book, and I just wrote this with Seth, hoping that a few people might, but mainly my parents, my kids, my ex-wife, and my friends and their kids could feel proud of me again, at least in some small way. So I'm very heartened about the book.
Well, I will just say this to anybody out there who's listening and watching right now. And I will say this, especially since this show is frequently on the air on a lot of news talk stations and people who might not have the same, what would you say? I guess, political, cultural opinions as you, okay?
Right.
But, and that's part of what's also, upsetting about this country is you have a political discussion and it'll eventually turn personal for a lot of people, demonizing one side instead of, and sometimes sports, which should be the great connector, that even gets pulled into it, right?
Right.
The bottom line is what you're talking about knows no political boundaries, 0.0 political boundaries. What you are talking about, everybody knows somebody who's gone through it. So I would counsel to say, even if they think, oh God, here's Rex, they should listen to your story, brother.
Rich, I couldn't agree anymore. Earlier someone said to me, or yesterday, I forget when it was, it's all running together. Someone said, well, look, Rex, you got to cut yourself a break. You had all those surgeries your last few years and you came by this problem honestly. That doesn't matter. I understand what the person is saying. The issue is once you're there, you're there. It doesn't matter how you get there. I got there because, I had some injuries. But also, I may have come across that anyway if I found out it could numb my feelings and all of that. Or it doesn't matter if you go out on a three-day bender on the weekend and, you party all weekend and now you're addicted. What happens? Now what happens? You're there and you got to get out. It doesn't matter how you got there. You just got to find a way to dig yourself out. And I can't recommend therapy any more than I already have. And I can't recommend opening up to friends, close friends, leaning into people, have somebody around you that goes, how are you doing, man? No, really, how are you doing? I would never answer those questions. I'd deflect and make a joke and just get out of an awkward situation. I could never admit that I wasn't okay. And it's okay to admit that.
Well, before I let you go, tell me your favorite basketball story in the book. Because obviously, this is a memoir, and you're filled with those,
you know,
and all the LeBron haters out there are thinking maybe he bought your book and posted it so you'd stop saying Jordan's the best player of all time, but.
Say that because I was better than Michael one night. So that I was the best player in the world.
You were, Rex. So what's a good story? Because folks can get this book also if they're interested in some of your hoops stories.
Yeah, well, too, I don't know if it's my favorite story, but it is a story.
Okay.
I got in trouble a lot growing up. I pushed the boundaries, and mainly because I think I knew I could get away with things because they couldn't afford to sit me out and on the basketball floor.
Nice.
One time as a junior, I was probably the best player in the state. And we had been playing a team that really challenged us. And jump ball. And side note, it was my future father-in-law's team we're playing against. So this kid on his team, who he always put on me, really good athlete, white kid, Todd Arms is his name, and I've apologized to Todd Arms a million times over this. Todd, I'm sorry. So, Todd, I went up to shoot a ball, first play of the game, and he turned around and boxed me out before I came down and undercut me, and I landed on the ground. Come down again, he did the same damn thing, and I pulled him down on top of me so the play could run, the referees would get up the court. We both got up, and we're jogging back, and I look around, and there's 6,000 people in the stands. And I elbowed Todd Arms in the nose, cracked him as we're running back down the court, and his face exploded, blood everywhere. Oh. Like, I've never seen so much blood. Their teammates started running at me. My teammates started getting in the way. There was a big sort of melee. The referees didn't see what happened. I ended up getting a technical. And had that video been on, had that game been on video, there's a high probability I'd have never played in college. It was bad. Like, it was bad, bad. And, you know, I had, I'm so stupid. They called me in the next day and said, you need to call their coach, who was my, became my father-in-law later. And apologize. You need to call Todd Arms and apologize. And I said, what? Did you see what he did to me? Like an idiot. So, but I did call. I did apologize. Okay. And I apologized so much, so many times over the years. There are funny stories in the book. There are funny basketball stories. I thought that one was, I thought that I wasn't all I was cracked up to be. I had some real issues emotionally that always needed tackling. I'm glad I finally tackled them.
Yeah, in a book, again, it's hard for me to live with me. Okay, then let's finish up with the story you just kind of alluded to for those who may not know. The night you were better than Jordan, best player in the world, what was that?
Which night was that?
You got one? Is it one night? One night? What do you got?
No. That. Oh, what did you want? You wanted me to talk about that night?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Against the Bulls?
Yeah.
We had eight players because we just made a trade for Tim Hardaway. We were sending out Billy Owens and getting Timmy back, and there were players in transit. And so we had to play the Bulls, who they only lost 10 games that whole year. We had to play the Bulls, and Miami came into town, and they were out all night long on South Beach, at South Beach. And I know that because I was there part of the night. But I went home early, and they came out. It was they really were on vacation, I promise. And I got hot. And as Jimmy Lynam used to say, a former teammate of mine, or a coach of mine, when you let a player in this league get going, you got yourself an effing problem. So I got going, and there was nothing that them or anyone else could have done that night. It was it was a great win for us. Fantastic. And a couple weeks later, we played them, and we went out for the jump ball, and threw the referee threw the ball up, and Michael 39. Elbowed. He elbowed me right in the sternum, Michael did, intentionally. And we're friends. And I went, oh man, it's going to be like that tonight. And it was. He got like 40 and three quarters and didn't play the fourth. He'd been thinking about that game for 2 weeks. And he and I know each other. Like, we're friends. He'd been thinking about that game for 2 weeks and thought I had embarrassed him and embarrassed them, which – yeah, but probably did. But we ended up playing them in the playoffs, and they swept us in three games like we were a JV team. It was no match. But, yeah, we got them that one night, and they would have been 73-9 if not for us.
You're a factor, Rex. What was the line? What was the line that night, Chris?
39 for Rex, 9 of 10 from three, big boy.
There you go.
Yeah, let me tell you this. You might not know this. Who scored the most points in a game against that 72-10 team?
Who's that?
Me.
What was that? 39?
39.
That was 39. It? Yeah. That's the most anybody scored that night. It was 30 all season.
On that team that season, yes.
So, of course, he elbowed you in the stomach 2 weeks later.
Yeah. Yeah. I got everybody's attention after that.
You did. And you have our attention with this book, brother. Love you. Congratulations on all of this. You are truly awesome. And thank you for writing it and sharing it as freely as you have, Rex.
Thanks, Rich. Love you much.
Right back at you. At Rex Chapman. Follow him. Do all of that good stuff. At It's Hard for Me to Live with Me, co-written with Seth Davis. Rex Chapman right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Take care, buddy.
See you, bud.
You bet. That's Rex right there.
The best.
you don't score 39 with Jordan and get away with it. 2 weeks later, he hits him in the stomach.
Also, what he left out there is, you know, the story of the game is one point Phil Jackson had to pull Jordan off of Chapman because he just wasn't guarding him well enough.
Oh.
So he made him switch off of him. So, you know, that added
that just,
to that elbow.
That just made him even more.
Oh.
12 of 17
Damn,
from the field.
I didn't know that little twist. All right, we'll take a break. Interesting twist in college football. Some people don't want to be a head coach anymore. And wait till you hear the names of those people. Somebody who said he retired because of one, and somebody who took a coordinator's job because of it. That's coming up.
Welcome to Talkville, the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Title Transference aired October 27, 2004. Director James Marshall, writers Todd Slavkin, Darren Swimmer. I really like this episode, and I'm surprised that you don't like it as much as you thought you did.
I actually respect your opinion more than I respect my own in general. When you say things are good and I check them out, they are.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
I got an email today from the LenPenzo.com HR department. I find it really interesting. I'm an employee of one at this company, but somebody from the HR department sent me an email telling me that I had a raise. If I just opened the attachment, I could see how much my raise was.
Make sure you click on the links that are in there, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm excited.
Find out more by searching the Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
You're a type of guy that figures if it's not going the Yankees' way, it's because the way you're sitting or what you're wearing. You literally believe that.
Oh, yeah. I literally believe that. Like, somebody can walk in the room and I'll go like, who's this guy? You got to be careful. And like, one time my brother-in-law was sitting in a chair against the Red Sox and the guy hit a bomb. And then he came the next night. And I said, you sat there last night? And he goes, yeah. I go, no, just sit over here. He goes, I can't sit here. I said, sit over there. You were there last night. You screwed everything up. So
that's family that you treat your brother-in-law?
I don't care. Though? I don't care if it's a brother-in-law. You know what I mean? I mean, I throw my hat sometimes when I get mad. That might turn it. And I go, all right, leave the hat. Drop the baseball. Leave the baseball. I'm telling you. Like, last night, I brought out the broom, and Chapman was starting to sweat me out.
Right.
I go, get that broom out of here. Get the broom out of here right now. Don't fool around right now with the mojo. I can do that in my house. When I'm at the stadium, at least I'm with people like me that I can relate to, so I don't have to do that. It's harder to watch than to participate because you have no control. It's like on an airplane. Your life, you could die. You're like, you know, you go like that when you land and whatever. So you're out of control. At least when you're acting or you're doing the scene,
right,
it's you. But I feel like I could turn things sometimes. I just feel like if I'm there, like even though with the Astros, I feel like if I go to H-Town, I could beat those Cowboys right in that stadium. Somehow my mojo. I almost did it once in 2001 in the Diamondbacks, Game 7.
Yeah.
It was working. It was freaking working. People were calling me when Soriano hit a homer.
Yeah.
I said, don't jinx it. They go, you're doing it. You're doing it. I said, I know. And then there was that stupid bunt where Mariano threw the ball to second. Never should have did that. Changed the whole inning.
It did change
I was almost in tears. Imagine driving back in the desert 5 hours after a lost Game 7 like that.
You're in tears, huh?
Oh, yeah. Some guy goes, wow, you're a real fan. I said, yeah, I know.
Can't wait to see him at Cage's Wii Ball games.
Oh.
Up here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Listen, we were having this conversation. I know Susie had it with, and Amy Trask had it with Louis Riddick in the What the Football podcast that I suggest everybody go listen to because, you know, most of the content is still evergreen, even though it was a scouting combine preview. About has NIL affected the way players are approaching the combine? You know, is the fact that Caleb Williams already has all those millions in the bank and the attention paid to him and by him, the others to him, changed the way that he approached the combine, right? Or, hey, he's got a different mindset than I have to do it the way everyone else has done it. And Louis Riddick's answer is interesting. And, you know, it's fascinating how much name, image, and likeness caught everyone unprepared when it first hit. and the transfer portal and all of those aspects of college football. No preparation for it. And everyone's just reacting on the fly. And how that has led some coaches to not want to be in college anymore. These two events occurring today. Nick Saban telling, I believe it's, is it Chad Lowe of, Chris Lowe, pardon me, of ESPN? He said that the way that Alabama acted after being bounced by Michigan shed light on his decision to retire, that it was the right time. I'm really disappointed in the way that the players acted after the game. He said, I want to be real clear that this wasn't the reason, but some of those events certainly contributed to him thinking it's time to step away. You got to win with class. You got to lose with class. We had our opportunities to win the game. We didn't do it. And then showing your A after being frustrated and throwing helmets and doing that stuff, that's not who we are and what we promoted in our program. He said, in meeting with the players after the season, Saban estimated 70 to 80% wanted playing time and NIL assurances, furthering the idea that it was time for him to hang up his whistle. That's what this was written. Quote, so I'm saying to myself, maybe this doesn't work anymore, that the goals and aspirations are just different and that it's all about how much money can I make as a college player. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's never been what we were all about. And it's not why we had success throughout the years. Again, I'm sitting here, and I agree with Jay Billis. Players deserve to be paid. And the way it used to be is not the way it's going to be anymore. It's professionalizing the sport. I believe Dartmouth is attempting to unionize, and Dartmouth basically said, not here, you're not. We're not paying you. I'm paraphrasing. And I have no problem with it. The issue I have with it is there's no rules for it. There's no rules for it. And that's why I think a lot of coaches are knocking on the door of the NFL, where there are rules for it. I mean, the new league year begins next week. Now, are there ways around talking to people before you're allowed to? Of course. But you know when free agency is, and you know when the contract is, and you know that, you know, if somebody doesn't like their playing time, you've signed a contract. You're being paid. Right? Mm-hmm. The fact that you have to, with the transfer portal as well, have to make sure if somebody's being paid, you know, and they're or they've been promised something and they don't like their playing time, they'll just say, I'll leave to go somewhere else. Now, again, coaches go ahead like Brian Kelly on a recruiting trip, left the recruiting trip and deuced out on Notre Dame, going to LSU. So why shouldn't a player be able to do that? I totally agree. I totally agree. But shouldn't there be some rules around it other than the ones that seem to be non-enforceable or non-existent? What about the other way around? What about a kid that's promised, I'll give you this money to come to the school, and then all of a sudden the playing time's no longer there, and suddenly the NIL money that he's been promised is full Magic Johnson. Ain't gonna be there. What about that? What about how that works? And I guess keeping track of all this was too much for Chip Kelly. He just wants to be a ball coach. Just get back to the X's and O's, back to the old school. I'm worrying about the scheme and coaching kids up, not worrying about anything else that's outside of it. He was introduced to the media as the new Ohio State offensive coordinator. After he gave up the head coaching job at UCLA as they're about to enter the Big Ten for a Big Ten offensive coordinator gig. That happened in 2024. This is what he had to say about his decision.
John Lennon, when he was a little kid, that had an assignment of what do you want to be when you grow up? And he said, I want to be happy. And then his teacher said, I don't think you understand the assignment. And his mom said, I don't think you understand life. So I just want to be happy. and I'm really happy coaching a position. Really happy to be at this place. You know, it would have taken a special place for me to leave UCLA because I love those players and I love that coaching staff. But to be here with Ryan, I had a great relationship. I've known Ryan since he was a little kid. So I think a lot of things just fell into place that way.
I think they're New Hampshire, right? Isn't that their connection?
Chip Kelly was the head coach at New Hampshire. He might have coached Ryan Day, right? At New Hampshire, yeah.
So they, when he says he knew him as a little kid, right? And I, you know, in the collective and all of that stuff, you know, that was what I was hearing at the combine too. I heard the number is north of $13 million to put the team together at Ohio State to get a lot of kids. I mean, there was some of those kids from Alabama when transferred there. They look terrific right now, roster-wise, on the Ohio State. They are loading for bear. And I guess, Chip, look, that's Ryan Day's gig and the collectives and all of that stuff and the NIL, and that's his thing, and all he's got to do is just scheme it up. And, of course, beat Michigan. Yep. Like, those are his two. Coach up the kids and make sure you win that Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend.
Yep.
In a way that the defense on Michigan can't handle. But that's where we're at in college football. That's where we are at because, and who's going to get this thing handled?
Now, do you...
You, Charlie Baker?
Do you blame Saban or Chip Kelly or what is your...
What do you mean blame? My opinion?
Yeah.
How can I blame? Well, listen, Nick has done it a certain way. That certain way is over. He's of a certain age where he's just like, do I need this? No. And Chip Kelly, you know, doesn't want to do it. Listen, I the only way I could try and make an analogy is I was a staff writer for the Staten Island Advance on the news side of things. And I realized... And I don't know if this is the proper analogy here. I realized when I was on a beat and I was sitting in the newsroom, and this was back in, I guess, the early 90s. It had to have been. Yeah, after I graduated in 90. And one of George Bush Sr.'s 1,000 points of light. Remember, he had the 1,000 points of light to point out people who were leaders in their community. And one of the 1,000 points of light lived in Staten Island and was a principal in a high school in Brooklyn, who would be somebody who goes and knocks on the door of truants and say, come on, I'll take you to school. I'll take you to school. And he knocked on the door of, I guess, of a truant and was taking the kid to school and got caught in some sort of crossfire and was shot dead. And the main reporter slash columnist who was the main writer for the newspaper, she was out on assignment. And this was before cell phones. And her walkie-talkie was out of range. Mm-hmm. And who was sitting there not on assignment? But me. And they walked up to me and say, go to the house in Staten Island of this school principal and get comment from the family.
Oh.
That was my reaction.
Jeez.
So I went in the... Have I never told you this story?
No, I've okay. never heard this.
I went into the back room of our newsroom and sharpened about 50 pencils and looked for the exact right new reporter's notebook that had the right number of pages. And I kept flipping them over to see, was it one page catches on the rings? I need another one. I was beyond delaying and trying to procrastinate.
Wow.
Because I didn't want to do that. And I procrastinated long enough, and I'm like, okay, just this is a job. I got to do it. And just at that point, the reporter who normally would have the assignment, who was out of range, came back in the newsroom. They explained to her what had happened. She turned on a heel and went right on assignment, and I got off the hook. Wow. And I'm not sitting here thinking what she did is wrong or
just mindset.
But that's her. She was more experienced than me. That's her mindset. She knows that's what the job is, and she did it expertly, I might add. I wasn't cut out for it, and I realized on the spot I better find a different line of work. And I'm wondering if that's what Chip Kelly's talking about. Because I wasn't happy. I wasn't cut out for it. If the job is this, I'm not cut out for it. I'm just, I don't have that, you know, gumption or drive or desire or, I guess, well, I could better phrase stomach for it. I just didn't. So I'm not sitting here saying, Chip, you should, you know, suck it up, man. He sits there and he's less like this other stuff that I got to figure out. I got to work on. I got to recruit my own players after I've recruited them. I then got to go find these kids. I got to fly around the country. I got to do all this stuff. Other coaches are like, I'm in. Sharon Moore, my guy at Michigan, is just like, I'm in. I got it. Kalen DeBoer, I'm in. I got it. You're in Syracuse. You got it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ryan Day. I mean, keep going on. The list goes on and on and on. But some are just like, that's not me. And if Nick Saban, after decades of all-time success, says, I'm out, I hear it. And the same thing with Chip. I'm not going to sit here and criticize that you're weak because you can't figure it out. He just figured out. Like, that's the only analogy I can give.
That's good.
In that response.
I never heard that.
You can't put a price tag on happiness.
Well, that's what he's saying. You know just... but I'm sure there are tons of UCLA fans who are just like, Deshaun Foster's like, I'm in.
And that's right for him.
And it's a different world. People like Deion have figured it out. Yeah. Well, off the bat. And so are the other coach. I think Harbaugh, a lot of people say, like, he ran off to the pros to avoid the NCAA coming after him, which I think is ridiculous. But he had it figured out. Last 3 years, figured that thing out. Mm-hmm. So some people are ready for it and up for the challenge and are into it because they know that's the job and they love it. And others are not. Mm-hmm. Take a break. Finish up this show in a moment. 844-204-RICH. You want to have a chat.
Hi there. Sorry for the interruption, but... are you enjoying this show on Google Podcasts? You should know that the Google Podcasts app is going away this spring. That's right, going away, gone as in no longer available. You can still enjoy this show elsewhere, though. Try out Spotify or Amazon Music, or maybe TuneIn is more your style. Whatever app you switch to, be sure to follow so you never miss the next episode. And thanks for listening, wherever you listen.
We're back here. Boy, I didn't expect to tell that story. I was scared down to my socks.
I got
to
say, I've heard.
I was scared down to my socks.
I've heard pretty much all your stories at this point.
I feel like I'm boring you.
No, absolutely not.
They're new to
me. Absolutely not. But I've never heard that one. And I'm glad you told it because that just kind of gave me flashbacks to some of my early young newspaper days in Maine. It's the same deal. It's like, oh, man, I don't want to do this.
You're cut out for it or you're not?
You want me to write about what?
Yeah.
So, yeah, sometimes you just got to go through it to find out if it's right for you or if it's not.
But if it's right for others and it's not for you, it doesn't mean that the other is the weirdo.
No, exactly.
That's for
totally.
Them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I had a job producing the show for MTV where I had to spend time with a contestant. And the goal was for the contestant to pass off an actor as their real friend, right?
Right.
And if they could last of 48 hours passing this person off as a real friend to their actual friend, they'd win money. Mm-hmm. So I would get all this information out of them about all their friends, all these deep secrets, and pass it to the writers. And after two episodes, I just watched real friendships crumble and just anger between friends. And I was just like, man, I don't feel good doing this right now. And
it's being deceptive. Yeah, it's
very
not,
deceptive.
Yeah.
We're ruining real friendships for a game. And I was like, this isn't for me, man. I don't want to do this.
Is it? Absolutely. And then so when he's like, you know, just be happy.
Yeah.
Just be happy.
The problem is that the people he left behind are very unhappy. Well, yeah. Maybe he did him a favor when he said that, I don't want to do it anymore.
If your heart's not into it, you're not doing them any.
Correct.
You're not doing them any service. Yeah. So,
real talk.
Real talk.
No doubt about that. And we're back here on the Rich Eisen Show radio network on the air, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Another friendly reminder that if you and your family or if your friends, your girlfriend, your spouse, your boyfriend, you want to go to any way, shape, or form, any concert, movie, any concert or music or sports event or theater event near you, Game Time Tickets is how you go about getting your good spot. It's so easy to buy tickets, just two taps. You see where you want to go and sit in the arena, sit in the theater, and then you check out the prices. You start shopping around. You start figuring out where you want to go, depending on the price, what night you want to go, depending on the seat. And then you make your move. And then you find out exactly how much it costs before you hit the purchase button. So everything is called all-in prices there. That's what I love the most. So you can figure out where to sit, how much it is. Zero guesswork. It's totally removed when you buy tickets with Game Time. So download the Game Time app, create an account. You can use my code RICH and you get $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem the code RICH, you get $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Wild show. And I just want to say here again on what I just equated with Chip Kelly's decision to not want to be a head coach anymore and go do something that makes him happier because of the work that's required. He realized he's not cut out for it. And I equated that to a time where I didn't want to cover essentially somebody being wiped off the planet and getting an immediate comment from a family back in my staff writer days in my hometown newspaper. I'm not equating the two things. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying that they're just different endeavors where you realize what's required of you and you just realize I'm just not cut out for it. I'm just wondering if that is exactly what happened with Chip Kelly, as today he showed up in Ohio State as the offensive coordinator officially. So there's all of that. Good show. Rex Chapman on today.
Love it.
And our friend Michael Wilbon on today. Good times. 1 week from today, it's going to be on and cracking.
Yeah,
literally at this moment in time.
Yeah. I'm excited for the rumors to start.
Well, the rumors are going to start later this week and weekend. And then Monday and Tuesday, things are going to actually happen.
Yeah.
Where players are going to, as you know, the deals get announced. And then Wednesday, they become official. Mm-hmm. And the Broncos have told Russ, go talk to teams now. They've already given permission.
That's cool. Doing them a solid.
I know.
That's great.
The problem is who's the one that's going to say, we're not going to knock on other doors in free agency. Let's strike your deal right now. I don't think there is one. That's his issue.
Yeah.
Everybody that's interested in a quarterback. Minnesota is waiting to see what Kirk does with Atlanta. And if they're in the mix, they have. By the way, I saw a story. I believe it's Kevin Seifert of ESPN saying that if Kirk signs after the new league year begins, it adds some sort of a dead cap mechanism that is not on the books if he signs before the new league year. So Kevin O'Connell, we'll discuss it again tomorrow. Kevin O'Connell coming on the combine and saying to DJ and yours truly that he thinks that Kirk's going to go through the a business of free agency and talking to other people. That might take Minnesota out of the mix. So you need to see what's happening there, correct? New England and everyone else needs to know what's happening with the Bears first. And the Bears might not make a move at all because they haven't apparently seen Caleb Williams in their building yet.
After his pro day, right?
So all of that stuff is what's playing out and going into next week.
USC pro day March 20th.
I'm imagining the Buccaneers and Baker will make a deal before the new league year begins. And we'll find that out short order. So who's going to basically tell Russ, we'll sign you right now? I think they're all going to be saying, we're interested. Depends on what happens. Stay by the phone.
Russell Wilson gets a new team before or after the draft?
Oof. Hmm. Wow. If I had to guess right now, I'd say after.
Yeah.
Everybody figures out what they're doing and who they get in the draft.
The spots are, what the holes are.
But as you know, things change so damn fast in this league. But if I had to guess, I'd figure that out. Even though the Broncos are like, go and start talking to people right now. The question is who's going to just fill up their dance card, Russ, you're the guy, and also say you're the starter, you're not going to compete.
That seems unlikely.
Well, that's the whole point, because he needs to sign somewhere where it, all of a sudden it's not like, yeah, well, we just where he gets where he's the Matt Flynn.
Yeah.
And the kid they draft is the Russell Wilson.
Wow.
Right.
Career's full circle, man.
Like, he doesn't want to. He's seen it happen on the other side of it. Unbelievable. Craziness. Because 2 years ago at this time, it's just like, all right, who's getting Russ? And the Broncos are like, we will. And we're going to give up a ton of draft capital and sign him to a $254 million contract extension that he won't play a single down on.
That's so insane.
Make it up. That wraps up this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Thanks again to great friends Rex Chapman and Michael Wilbon for being on this program. For the rest of you, we will chat on Thursday. Unless you're watching on Roku, we'll wrap it up in a moment.
Movies, TV shows, books, podcasts, and more. It's What Women Binge with Melissa Joan Hart and her friend Amanda Lee.
We have Lauren Bosworth with us.
Yay!
The Hills. So what is like your number one question from fans?
The primary question I still get asked was, "What is it real?" In 2024, to me, is a surprising question to get because I feel like everybody has been through the reality TV gauntlet at this point.
What Women Binge, wherever you listen.